We're talking jazz now, and my guest on the phone seems to have already created a lifetime of achievements in his relatively short career to date. He started playing piano at 5, then clarinet, and then chose the saxophone at the age of 11. He studied with Blaine Whittaker and at the Sydney Conservatorium, and since completed his Bachelor of Music and a PhD. He founded his own record label and jazz orchestra under the name of Earshift. He co-founded the world roots band The Vampires and the Afro-reggae band The Strides. He's an acclaimed composer and he's been nominated for almost every prestigious Australian Jazz Award and continues to pursue opportunities to study and collaborate with artists all over the world. He's about to release album number 19 as a co-leader or leader. Jeremy Rose, welcome to Now's the Time.
Oh, Frank, I feel exhausted. Oh, thanks for that introduction. Yeah, and I guess I've been on your show, it must have been a few years ago, and I recall the research that you did into my biography, so... thanks for reminding me of when I started clarinet and piano and all that sort of stuff. So, it's great to be on your show.
Interestingly, it's been 10 and a half years, would you believe, since you were last on Now's the Time, but how time flies.
Oh, wow.
I wanted you to, given that length of time, I wanted you to briefly recap for our listeners how you came to music. You had to decide almost on the spur of the moment between medicine and music. Who were your early influences? Your family appreciated jazz music, didn't they? You grew up in Manly.
I did, yeah. Yeah, Northside listeners would appreciate that. Early influences. I mean, I was just fortunate to be in a household that enjoyed listening to music all the time. And, you know, it was a very diverse range of listening habits that I was inducted into through my parents' record collection. Everything from jazz, a lot of world music, folk music, and, blues and rock. And I guess I kind of, absorbed a lot of that. And there was a piano around the house, and I found myself sort of gravitating towards sort of coming up with my own versions of tunes pretty early on and improvising quite a bit. In fact, in primary school, I formed my first jazz band, and I used to write out solos for the performers in the group who couldn't improvise. So I guess, I've been composing for quite a long time. That has really gone hand in hand with me as an improviser.
I guess one of the things that jumped out to me about this particular brand new album that you're about to launch this coming Friday night, Face to Face, is the fact that you're actually playing the tenor saxophone on a number of the tracks, and the absence of the alto saxophone, which we've been sort of known and used to associating with your playing.
Yeah, well, actually, it's a funny story how I came about to be playing tenor. One of my best mates and closest musical collaborators, Nick Garbutt, a trumpeter from the Vampires and the Strides, his parents acquired a music instrument hire business from Wollongong. I think his dad was trying to change career paths at the time. And not only did they have a few dozen beginner violins, but they had this immaculate-looking Mark VI Selmer saxophone.
Wow.
And I would go over to their house, every few days and just blow on it. And, I kind of fell in love with the instrument and I really, I couldn't put it away. And, I guess I've always listened to tenor players. So I think a lot of that sort of came out when I started playing the tenor. And I started playing the tenor in the Strides, and I think word got out that I was playing tenor, and all of a sudden I was depping for Matt Keegan in Cameron Nunney's band, and I was thinking to myself, geez, I better get my chops together, because this is quite serious now. And I guess from there on it's been really kind of one of my main voices amongst bass clarinet and soprano saxophone. But, I still have an alto, but I think tenor has sort of become my primary saxophone at the moment.
Now, this is very much a concept album, and it's exploring some issues around communication and interaction between and amongst humans. And I wanted to particularly discuss a couple of those concepts behind two of the pieces tonight, which we have heard one already, High Ground, and of course the title track a little later. But just in relation to High Ground, this is about today's social media dilemma, isn't it? Which in a lot of ways has made us more divided than ever before. Tell us your thoughts on why the theme of this piece is so important to consider and I guess bring to the fore in a musical setting.
Yeah, well, you know, we live in a digital age, and the oxymoron of being always connected, this idea of hyper-connectivity, has also come at the cost of some of us never feeling so alone. And, you know, we've just been through such a remarkable period in history where, you know, a lot of the social interactions we've had were virtually. And another point to make is the way that misinformation and conspiracy theories have been spread through the internet in this kind of echo chamber-like fashion. And, you know, it's really important for us to be mindful of the spread of misinformation. And I've seen colleagues and have heard of friends who have had family members that have gone down the path of subscribing to misinformation and other theories, and it's created massive division. And I guess, you know, this kind of the entry into society of rather extreme views. So, you know, it can be a downward spiral. I think it's something that we need to be mindful of. Writing messages on a phone is it can invite quite a different response than we might have if we were talking to someone face to face. So yeah, that feeds into the broader theme of the album, which is really kind of a reflection on what's important to us as human, the real life human connections of face to face.
Now, the idea of the theme behind this album and I guess composing for a certain theme, I mean, we've already mentioned you're quite an acclaimed composer in a rather short career to date. But without the luxury of having lyrics in pieces and only instrumentals, to bring out the ideas of these themes, tell us in particular what strategies or tools that you use as a composer to try and, I guess, uncover the ideas of these themes in every particular piece or melody or, you know, approach to the arrangement that you might have to actually bring these themes to the foreground.
I think it's a combination of both direct connotations and then more subtle, kind of broader, I guess, emotional reflections on a certain melody or, you know, a harmonic sequence that kind of imbues a certain kind of a feeling or reflection from me when I'm composing. You know, I guess that track we just listened to, High Ground, there's an obvious kind of searching for like a high climactic point within the melody. So I guess that is one sort of direct motif that I was kind of thinking about when I was writing that piece. And it's contrasted against a static bass part, which is literally playing an A flat note throughout the whole thing, but you don't really think of it as being just one note because the harmony underneath is shifting so much. So I guess it's kind of like this kaleidoscope of harmony that's shifting over the top of the pedal note, and I guess that's kind of, you know, a reflection of the echo chamber. But of course, this is, you know, we can I like to leave the connotations up to the listener to make up their own mind, because as we all know, the beautiful thing about music is that it, you know, it is an abstract art form, and you know, I think anyone can make up their own mind about what the music means to them.
Yeah, that's right. It can be interpreted in many different ways. Tell us a little bit about the qualities you were after in your band members, because this is a I think this is the first time you've recorded with this quartet. I may be mistaken, but Steve Barry, which we heard with his own trio album a little earlier on piano, Noel Mason, double bass, Alex Hurlian, the drums.
Yeah, well, these are some of the most exceptional musicians around in not only Sydney but probably Australia from their generation, and they are really pushing the possibilities of what they can do on the instrument. I mean, Steve and I have a quite a long history of performing together. I recorded an album of his called called Blueprints and Vignettes quite a few years ago that he was that he put out as part of his PhD research. And he has undergone a significant transformation since that study, where he was essentially a postbox, he was steeped in the language of bebop, and he, you know, studied 20th century classical composition processes and kind of emerged with this sophisticated harmonic language. So that's a real joy to work with Steve. And the other two musicians are both also quite virtuosic, and they're really great to work with. We've been performing together for quite a few years now, and actually this album came together, or at least quite a few of the pieces came together as part of a performance for International Jazz Day in 2020, I believe. And it was in the middle of one of Sydney's lockdowns, and we only had about half an hour for the sound check and rehearsal, and I gave him some of these pieces to play for that set. So they were, I don't know if they were happy or a bit freaked out by, you know, having to play brand new music in that situation, but they'll literally be able to do, they're able, capable of doing anything. And that's why I love working with them.
Jeremy, 10 and a half years ago, you mentioned to me that your musical quest is to continually search for the truth in music. Now, it's all about the journey rather than the destination, and your journey so far has been incredibly scenic, I would have thought. What's next on the horizon for you?
I've got a few releases in the pipeline from collaborative projects of mine, including a project with Zella Margossian called Visions of Nar, and we have an album coming out, I think, early next year. I've also got an album coming out with The Vampires with a collaboration with the pianist from The Next, Chris Abrahams, called Nightjar, and that's also going to be coming out early next year. And I'm actually recording another album for my Earshift Orchestra early next year, so that should be out in late 2023. Actually, while I remember, there's also a album called Disruption, The Voice of Drums, performed by myself with the Earshift Orchestra, and that's going to be released on the 14th of October.
Wow, you have been very busy. Well, I caught the Visions of Nar gig with yourself and Zella at the Sydney Conservatorium Jazz Festival earlier this year. It was absolutely fabulous, so thanks very much for that, Jeremy. That was wonderful. Really enjoyed gig. Yeah. Finally, the title track, Face to Face, I mean, we've touched on it already, but I guess, you know, especially during this pandemic, it's been a challenge for all artists of all kinds to be able to do what they do best, which is connect with the audience. What exactly are you trying to say in this particular piece and the title track of the album, Face to Face?
I guess just reiterating some of the broader themes of the album, that we live in a increasingly connected yet isolated world, and it's really a celebration of what's important to us as humans, which is face-to-face connections.
It sure is. Jeremy Rose, thanks very much for joining us on the line tonight.
Thanks for having me on, Frank.